Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments Podcast. Tune in to hear leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Matt Hoffman, Senior Editor with Neurology Live. In this episode, I sat down with Dr. Bhuma Aravamuthan, an assistant professor of pediatric neurology at Washington University in St. Louis, who, along with a number of colleagues, recently completed a survey of child neurologists and neurodevelopmentalists about their inclusion in the diagnosis of cerebral palsy. Her and I spoke about the findings from that survey, as well as the current status of care for CP and how these healthcare providers can be more involved. Let's dive in.
And I'm an assistant professor in pediatric neurology in the Department of Neurology at Washington University School of Medicine. So a few of us got together and started a cerebral palsy special interest group at Child Neurology Society, myself and Youngmin Kim, who's at Loma Linda. And our first meeting was in 2019. We started at very last minute, and the number of people that showed up filled the room. It was standing room only. There wasn't space to enter the room. It was just very clear that people were passionate and excited about talking about cerebral palsy from the neurologist and neurodevelopmentalist perspective. And this was a real, there was a real hunger to talk about it. So based on that, really at that meeting, we had a semi-guided discussion with some audience polling questions, but really just to get a pulse of how everybody was feeling. And in that meeting, it was clear that one of our main goals as a SIG was to really define what the role is of child neurologists and neurodevelopmentalists in cerebral palsy care. So that was the birth of this paper.
And now when it comes to just sort of diagnosing this, you know, what sort of role were you guys currently playing, if there was one? And then how challenging, obviously, is it to sort of get that diagnosis right? Are there specific obstacles to CP that compared to, you know, other diseases in that realm?
Yeah, so the diagnosis of CP is becoming increasingly complex, just because we're learning about other disorders that can act as CP mimics, so to speak. So disorders that can look like CP very early in life, but then later they end up not quite meeting a CP phenotype, meaning that they show evidence of progression or a degenerative component. And by that time, you realize there was time where maybe if you intervened earlier, you could have treated this patient a little differently and prevented some of those outcomes. And in the same vein, diagnosing CP accurately early is very important because the brain is very plastic. And the earlier you identify a child as having CP, the earlier they can gain access to the services they need. The clarity, there's an opportunity to give clarity to the family about what's going on with their child. So there are these almost opposing pressures of it's important to diagnose CP as early as possible, but it's getting harder and harder to diagnose CP the more we learn about all of the other disorders that are out there that would be treated differently. So it is very challenging, and it does require, what we argue in the paper is that it does require quite a lot of knowledge that neurologists and neurodevelopmentalists may not be the only people who have that knowledge, but maybe the most likely group of people to have that knowledge.
And so now when you surveyed, you know, this population of study participants and these physician stakeholders, what were some of the tools you guys used and what measures did you take to sort of do this? How many people did you survey?
Yeah, so some of the initial survey was done in the room during the CP SIG. So that was with Poll Everywhere, and we surveyed the group of people in the room that fit. And then later we followed up that survey with more detailed survey questions through a REDCap survey. And we were just, we were of the people in the SIG. So, there were 44 people in this group of people that we surveyed initially. And of those, 41 people responded to our survey questions. So a very high rate, just again, showing the engagement of the people who are interested in caring for this population.
And so then, you know, obviously you guys do this, you conduct this survey and you follow up with more detailed information. So what ultimately did you find? And were you, you know, shocked or surprised by that? Obviously, like you said, a lot of interest, but were the results sort of what you were kind of anticipating or?
I would say yes and no. So I think that we all, as a whole, perhaps as neurologists, we are all very interested in diagnosis. So what's causing the problem? What is the diagnostic workup going to be? And there was a heavy lean in the respondents towards our skills in diagnosing CP. And we do focus on that through the paper. It was surprising that even though this was a group of people that was really passionate about CP, that 20% of them may not get any referrals for CP diagnosis at all, which was shocking. We assumed that in this group of people that were really focused on CP, that everybody in that group would be diagnosing CP, but that was not the case. And the other thing that was a little surprising were the views on CP management. So CP care is shared between many different disciplines, and it has to be shared because we each have our own strengths and ranges of expertise. But the neurologists we surveyed were much more passionate about our skills in diagnosis compared to our skills in management of children with CP. And that was a point of contention for us as authors, because we also feel like neurologists can contribute quite a bit to CP management, although that wasn't reflected in the survey responses.
So obviously this bit of conjecture here, but why do you think personally, what's sort of your leaning as to why such a, you know, like you said, around 20%, why such a, you know, relatively high number of these people who feel confident in their ability to diagnose, you know, they're passionate about attempting to improve this diagnostic process. Why don't you think they're getting those referrals? What sort of causing that gap in getting patients who are potentially, you know, suffering from this disease to the people who can accurately diagnose it?
Sure. I think some of the existing guidelines, although this is changing, don't necessarily suggest that a CP diagnosis requires a specialist referral. So I think that a lot of these CP diagnoses often accurately are made in the community by community practitioners, which is often valid, particularly if the diagnosis is getting made early. And current recommendations suggest that at less than a year old, for children that demonstrate risk factors, you should really be considering making a CP diagnosis. And that could be happening in the community. I think the problem is likely that because guidelines aren't alerting practitioners to the value in referring to a neurologist for CP diagnosis, particularly with regards to ruling out some of these mimics that could be treated, or with regards to how important it is to make a CP diagnosis early, I think that is reflected in probably lower referral rates than we would expect.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, you know, if the community care community can catch it early, you know, that's obviously a good sign. But certainly, like you said, you know, the fact that it contrasts with the current guidelines is a little alarming. I'm curious, what does that sort of imply for you? And you mentioned that they are in the midst of changing, so I'd love to hear more about that. But what does that sort of imply about the accuracy of those guidelines? How long ago were they last updated?
So the most recent guidelines that were through the AAN on CP diagnosis was quite some time ago, so in 2004. What we know about CP has just changed dramatically since that time, particularly in the context of the mimics that I was talking about, and in the context of genetic etiologies for true CP diagnoses. So because of our just rapidly expanding knowledge, that guideline in terms of who has the training to parse through all of these diagnostic options, I think can change. There have been recent papers, a landmark study in 2017 by Iona Novak in JAMA Pediatrics that has really changed our views of how early CP can be diagnosed. And we're hoping that this paper, Neurology, will lead a wave of understanding amongst neurologists about the role we can play in diagnosing CP early and accurately.
And so now for you, are there, with regards to this type of survey, are there any plans to sort of assess this further, you know, maybe get a larger response group or anything like that? And do you think that there needs to be like a call for educational awareness to try to get these people, these neurodevelopmentalists and neurologists, a little more involved in this process?
Yes, yes, and yes. So we definitely want to expand the survey to a larger group of neurologists and neurodevelopmentalists, really to assess feasibility. I mean, CP is quite common. With some estimates, you know, at least 3 out of every 1,000 live births are affected by CP, and that's a lot of kids, and there are not enough neurologists and neurodevelopmentalists to diagnose all of them. So thinking about the feasibility of this recommendation is important. We, through the CP-SIG, are looking into further characterizing our views on CP management as a follow-up to this survey. And there are two education initiatives, one led by Youngmin Kim, who was the co-founder of the SIG along with me that I mentioned, and another led by Jenny Wilson at OHSU, Oregon Health and Science, looking at both residency training and fellowship training with regards to CP, kind of starting from the ground up, where we get all of our training. And then Youngmin is working on a compendium of the key literature on CP to share with neurologists and neurodevelopmentalists. And we're doing that in an iterative, expert-guided fashion. So lots more to watch out for from our Child Neurology Society Special Interest Group on this.
Yes, certainly something to keep an eye on. So, you know, with that in mind, and obviously, you know, like you said, it sounds like, a need to sort of update this process and kind of move forward and catch up, so to say, with the science. You know, how would you sort of describe the current state of care in cerebral palsy? I know that's a broad question. Yeah. And then, you know, looking forward to the next 6 months or year or so, what are you sort of, expecting to see from the future?
Yeah, so I would say, if I had to describe it in one word, it would be variable, which is, you know, I think a little bit harrowing to hear. I think the care you get is variable in a lot of different ways, based on your socioeconomic status, based on healthcare access, based on, even if you have great healthcare access, the specialty of the practitioner that you see. We each in different specialties have different styles of practice, different styles of training, different preferences. I think that there's a lack of comparative effectiveness data for the different styles of treatment approaches that we all use as different specialists. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge problem because CP is so common, and I think our practice is so variable. So education efforts, like you asked about, are, I think, important, but also really engaging as neurologists in multidisciplinary efforts to join with our colleagues in other specialties and really talk about our roles in caring for these children who, and as they become adults, is going to be really important. So this is, I think, recognizing the problem is probably going to be the first step. And I still think we're in the problem recognition phase, and not necessarily the phase where we can make it all homogenous how everybody's cared for CP. I think there's a lot left in terms of identifying what exactly we need to do first.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. To support the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, for more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.